Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the second and final day of our board meeting. And we are going to start today with a very interesting and dynamic topic, namely dynamic risk management. And I think I'll give the floor to Iliyana. Is that correct? Or is Riana starting off?
No, I think actually today Ziki will be starting the meeting.
Yeah, I'll do the quick introduction.
Okay, please, Gigi.
Thank you, Hans. It is our pleasure to bring back to the board the feedback from the DRM outreach based on the core model, as we discussed in July 2019 board meeting. The objective of the outreach was to assess the viability and operability of the DRM model and whether it will enable banks to better reflect their risk management in the financial statements compared to the current macro hedge accounting models. The detail of the outreach, including the number of participants and the geographical representation, are included in Agenda Paper 4. We would like to say a sincere thank you to all the participants for their time and effort during the outreach. The staff would like to highlight that this round of outreach is focused on the gathering feedback from the financial statement preparers. As part of the next steps in the project, we will then discuss the model with prudential regulators and investors and analysts to gather their input to the model. We have received voluminous feedback on a wide range of topics, some of which are in particular relevant to the question around the viability and operability of the model, while others relating to refinements and additional items to consider. Consistent with the objective of the outreach, we thought it would be more helpful to first focus only on the feedback that are deemed as critical to the viability and operability of the model. Once these areas are resolved, we will bring the other feedback. The staff will not ask the board to make any decisions in this meeting, but welcome views, comments, or questions on the feedback presented, which will help to set direction for the project. Thank you, and I will now give the floor to Lyra to begin with Agenda Paper 4A, sorry.
Thank you, Ziki. So Agenda Paper 4A provides an overview of the feedback received from participants in the outreach. Starting with the feedback on the objective of DRM model. So as we know, the objective is to better reflect the entity's risk management strategy and activities in financial statements and their effect. And participants in principle supported this objective, but many said that an equally important objective for DRM model must be to eliminate the accounting mismatch. So that is the mismatch which arises between financial assets and liabilities accounted for at amortized cost and the derivatives which are accounted for at profit or loss. In their view, the DRM model does not fully achieve this objective of eliminating the accounting mismatch, and that's primarily because of the mechanism in DRM model to recognize changes in fair value of designated derivatives into OCI. In addition, while all participants acknowledged that current hedge accounting requirements need improvement in the area of dynamic risk management, there were mixed views about what would be the right accounting approach. We provide a summary of these views in paragraphs 14 to 19 of the paper. Moving on to the next section of the paper, which talks about areas of DRM model that participants identified as significant improvements relative to the current hedge accounting requirements, namely better reflection of entities' risk management strategy and activities and their effect in financial statements, additional eligible items for designating in hedge accounting, such as core demand deposits, but also the ability to designate net open risk position was seen as a significant improvement. Finally, many participants also highlighted the potential of DRM model to bring better and more consistent information around performance measurement. Paragraphs 21 to 28 of this paper set out more detailed comments received on these key advantages. Finally, Because we wanted to provide a complete overview of the feedback, paragraphs 30 to 32 of this paper mentioned the key areas that participants said would need improvement within the DRM model. However, the detailed feedback for these key areas for improvement is included in separate papers and will be discussed next. So with that, I'll turn over to the board for any comments, questions, or any views that could help us to formulate the plan for the next steps in the project.
Okay, the floor is open. Françoise.
Thank you, Hans, and thank you to the team for a very thorough and fruitful outreach. I think that brings a lot of useful input into our next round of thinking. The only comment I would like to make at this stage is related to the objective, because when it seems to me that we tend to shift to an objective of reflecting how an entity would be successful in its hedging activities. And I think that has potentially side effects on how we should consider next steps. And personally, I would like to reformulate. To me, the objective of this project, I mean, we remain devoted to having the most faithful representation of economic performance of banks. And I think what we want to do is make sure that and the better alignment with the risk management strategies is in order to depict an economic performance that is not distorted by the effects of our accounting requirements. So I prefer to focus on the economic performance rather than avoiding accounting mismatches, but avoiding mismatches is the means to achieving a faithful representation of economic performance. And I think there is also the aim of, for transparency perspective, to isolate the effects of the hedging activities on net interest income. And that is supplementary information to the users.
Thank you, Françoise. Tadeo?
Thank you, Hans. First, I think that I should congratulate the staff for the work done so far. Very deep outreach with participants. I mean, that it's a very good and comprehensive work. And thanks for preparing the paper with the summary of this feedback. One thing that, at least for me, it's clear is the strong interaction between this proposal, the DRM model, and the regulatory environment. I think that this is something that is key, the way that we work our proposal. And there is one comment on 18D that would indicate that improving disclosure in line with some of these regulatory reports may be an important step forward in relation to the transparency on risk management. As we know that regulatory report may vary from one jurisdiction to another jurisdiction, I think that one good way of dealing with that is maybe working with cross references to avoid duplicating the information, but at the same time bringing the information where the regulatory environment in some jurisdiction might be weaker and this information might not be available. Thank you.
Thank you, Tadeo. Nick.
Thanks, Hans, and like others, many congratulations to the staff for a great set of papers and also an enormous amount of work that's gone into collating and collecting this information through outreach. So two questions. First of all, I note from the previous paper that around about two-thirds of the outreach participants were from Europe. Were there any discerning trends by jurisdiction or by region in terms of the feedback that we heard from participants? And then the second question relates to paragraph 18B of this paper, where you tell us that typically the outreach participants that you spoke to do not receive requests from analysts or investors for additional information on dynamic risk management. Now, I'm always a little bit dubious when we get things back in terms of hearsay that's gone through a filter already. And I'm pleased to hear that the next stage of the project will be reaching out in part to analysts and investors. But just in terms of the types of individuals that you met at these organizations, would they typically be on the front line of receiving such feedback? Would it something that would it normally have come to them in terms of those questions?
Does the staff want to respond?
So I think in terms of your first question around was there any pattern between, I think probably the most prevalent pattern was around the issue of sort of the volatility in IFRS equity. I think that was one of the notable patterns that was in specific jurisdictions that have some characteristics in terms of the market that they operate and the balance sheet structure that they have. And then I think the other two issues probably would be more prevalent across many jurisdictions.
And maybe just on that second question you had, Nick, about the type of individuals we spoke to. I think in a lot of cases it was a mix between the accounting and the reporting teams and the risk management team that does the dynamic risk management. And so I think in a lot of cases it would be some of the individuals that would, you know, get the questions if they are there. But maybe they don't have the direct communication with the investor team, but they would be the ones getting the questions, I think.
Great. Thank you.
Anne?
Thanks, Hans. Thanks for all the work here. It's so interesting to see this come back, and it's good to see that some participants at least support the objectives. But of course, we now have to accommodate the feedback that they want other objectives. And also, to me, there's such a strong element coming through the papers where people want the model to accommodate their current practices and you know, emphasising, telling us about problems without really telling us about ideas of how to modify the model. But the question I wanted to raise is was along the same lines as Nick, actually, because you did have a very substantial sample for what you're doing for the 28 banks. And in your paper 4, you show us that the majority of them are from the EU countries, 19, which means it's a very small sample of banks outside the 19. So I'm assuming that you're happy with your sample. So there must, within that sample, when you characterise it as 19 from the EU and however many from other countries, I'm assuming that the sample actually covers a lot of the conditions that you wanted to investigate, which it comes out a little bit in the subsequent papers, and Lyra just mentioned to it then about the equity situation of banks and their particular position about a volatility in equity. I think it would be useful if we knew more about the commonalities in the sample, not just their country, not region, because it's about the banks and their business models and how they conduct their bank and their activities, and then lining that up with the feedback so that we can get a sense of, when we see the feedback, which particular types of banks have got that position compared to others. Because at the moment, given what we know about the sample, we can't really interpret the feedback just knowing about countries. We need to know more about the types of banks who've got given the particular sets of feedback. You do touch on it in some of the papers, but if we could know more about that, I think that would help us analyse all the impressive detail you've given us. Thank you.
Sue?
Thanks, Hans. And this wasn't why I had wanted to comment, but I might as well just make an observation on my understanding of some of the reason for why there's a lot of European banks in the sample, and I think for a reason. My understanding is that that's largely not because they're European per se, but because of the particular interest about the subject in Europe, which arises because of, I think, structural features. So the fact that, for example, there's quite a lot of fixed rate assets in Europe, whereas in some other jurisdictions, like in Australia, for example, many mortgages are variable rate, and also the way that the banks are funded. So I think that that means that there's a particular interest and need for something to address this type of hedging in the European jurisdiction. So I think that that's reflected in the sample, and maybe the staff want to talk about that a bit later. But I think, to your point, Anne, it is structural things about the European business of the banks that means there's a lot of them in the sample, not because they're European per se. That's my understanding. I also echo the thanks of others to the staff, because it's a really difficult subject, and I know it was really hard to come up with a set of materials which was detailed enough to support these discussions but to facilitate understanding without having a full document for people to read through. It was really hard to get those materials to work, and they're hard conversations. Lots of people don't want what we're doing. And it's a very technical topic, so well done for the quality of the feedback that you've got and for really getting people to talk in detail about aspects of the project at this stage. I think that's really, really helpful for us to move forward. I just wanted to comment at a really high level about two aspects of the feedback in the cover paper. One is the comments from some that this is going to require a lot of change and investment. I'm not too surprised. It's useful to know, but that's often the case when we change accounting. So I think, we need to look at that, be aware of that, but it's not a reason to act in a particular way in of itself. Obviously, we need to be sure the benefits justify that, but it's not a reason not to do a project. But the thing that I wanted to focus on mainly was this concern about what the objective of the project should be, and the desire from some really to make this a project about accounting mismatches and our focus on trying to explain risk management and whether there's a sort of happy marriage between those two views of the world. Now, if people are talking about mismatches to include volatility and balances in OCI, I think that's a trickier issue because it goes to the entire mechanics of the model. So I'll set that aside for a moment and focus on P&L volatility. If people want us to come up with a model where there just isn't any P&L volatility when they do this type of hedge accounting, they're never going to be happy with what we do, because I can't imagine us ever accepting that, because that wouldn't in itself provide useful information. If what they mean is that there's only particular types of activity or particular types of economic mismatches which they believe should give rise to P&L volatility, then maybe we've got grounds to have a discussion. But I think for me, the question is, if we accept that when there are particular economic mismatches or situations when there's not a perfect match between what they try to achieve and what the outcomes are, what situations would they accept would legitimately give rise to what they see as mismatches or volatility in profit or loss? If we've got a huge disconnect between the situations when they can accept that and when we think that that's evidence of a particular type of performance, I think that's when we are going to have a real challenge trying to come up with something which the banks think is a good reflection of their performance. And for me, the thing to really dig into as a next step in talking about the objective of the project would be to see whether we can get a meeting of minds between us and the banks about the situations when they would agree that actually it would be appropriate to have P&L volatility because of the particular outcome that has occurred. if we just can't agree on what should be in that list, then I think we've got a real problem. But if we can get a better understanding of that, I think then we've got a better idea of whether we've got something we can really work with and get to work.
Well, that will be a tough call to get anybody to agree with volatility in the P&L, especially in the current situation in Europe. Martin?
Yeah, thanks, Hans. First, I also want to say thanks to the staff for these papers, which I think were very detailed and seen a lot of work in discussions where I participated in some. I think it was sometimes difficult discussions, but really good work. First, on the objective, I always have said, okay, the objective of this kind of hedge accounting is for me also to better reflect risk management, but also to avoid accounting mismatches. What was interesting from the feedback now, because when I said that in the past, it was always I thought about mismatches which occur in P&L volatility, which they said, okay, that is a kind of accounting mismatch, but that focus is now changed because people are now saying, okay, it is also, they see if we reflect then fair value of the derivatives for hedge accounting in OCI, that is also, say, using the word accounting mismatch. I would not agree to that because it is fundamental to the cash flow hedge accounting model. And if people don't agree and think, okay, that is an accounting mismatch, then we should forget really the cash flow hedge accounting model. So I don't agree, or I don't agree with this kind of comments that we can avoid both, because if we have a model which don't have any kind of reflections, then we should go back to fair value hedging. Maybe that is the solution. But if they don't accept that, I think that was core to our model now, that we have kind of reflecting of that in OCI. That is my first comment. My second is kind of, okay, the purpose of why we have done the outreach is, okay, to assess viability and operability of this kind of model. And I really don't know with this feedback what we can conclude on that, because there were some fundamental issues raised by not only some, I would say many preparers, which were, and I think which have to focus on that is the kind of, we said, okay, the model will work because we have a target model, which is a single outcome where people think, okay, their risk management objective should be. And that was the feedback was that is not the case. We have more a limit structure and the limits can be wide. Maybe in some banks are close. But then the question is, okay, does this model work with a kind of limit structure? And based on the feedback from preparers, we have not seen that they have made any proposals how that could be work. But that would be the next challenge, I think, for us, okay, to think about, will that model also work if we not focusing on a target model? Because that is then related to, okay, how do we measure performance of the model? And we all know performance of the model is a decision then what goes into P&L and what is going into the eye of the movements in the derivatives. Therefore, this is a key element. And based on that, I think we then have to decide sooner than later. And I think I'm not sure if we have to discuss first with users, with other people, okay, saying about that, because that was the objective of this thing that we first maybe think, okay, would people think this model is working in practice? And if we conclude not, I think we have to come to different conclusions, but that is for one of the next meetings. Okay, that is all what I want to say for the first paper. Thanks.
Okay. Chen Chao.
Thank you, Hans. First of all, I also would like to thank the staff, you know, for your excellent job has been done in terms of the outreach activities you conducted and the excellent paper you prepared to the board, particularly a lot of new information to us. I think it's really useful for us to decide the next step of the IM model. I do have two comments, first about objective and the second about the three key areas of further improvement of, you know, DIM model. In terms of project, you know, some stakeholders raised question about whether it's possible to eliminate accounting mismatch. And hopefully that would be an equally important objective. I have a little bit doubt about this kind of suggestion, because for me, I think Martin also mentioned that whether our model will be finally to try to eliminate accounting mismatch. It's very difficult, actually, volatility always be there. And for example, not about, dynamic risk management model, our general model of, a general hedging accounting model in terms of cash flow hedging. There's always, OCI there, and this kind of mismatch will not be eliminated in terms of this concern. So, but I do have some sympathy with some stakeholder concern about that. So I think whether, from my point of view, our basic objective still should be focused on better reflect risk management activities. Secondly, is it possible to eliminate some kind of accounting mismatch? This kind of objective not should be equally important. Instead, should try to whether it's possible to support to better, reflect risk management activities, what those banks or, stakeholders are doing. If it's possible, we can try to work out that. If it's impossible, maybe we can use other methods. For example, some people suggest whether we can work with regulators, whether we can provide additional disclosure, because I think currently the outreach activities, we only focus on preparers. I think next step we can, as Zhiqi mentioned, that we can also engage with users and regulators. What kind of information they favor? So I think there should be a hierarchy, not should be equally important if we will consider the possibility to eliminate accounting mismatch. So this is the first point I would like to make in terms of the objective. Obviously, another concern arising from this is that about transparency. Even we consider this this supporting objective, I think we should not lose the transparency of the information will be included in the financial statement. So this is the first point I would like to make. Secondly, I really appreciate that the staff develop three, key areas for improvement in the DIM models. There are many, concerns, points raised, but I agree with that we should first focus on those key areas and whether we can improve the DIM model. So I fully agree with those three key areas identified in paragraph 29 to 32. I think for the next step of our work, I think we can explore the possibility, for example, risk limit, or for example, it's possible to introduce the bottom layer, an ocean, something like that. I think this is the right way to move forward this project. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jianqiao. Mary, finally.
Thanks, Hans. A couple of comments, and some of it goes back to Ziki's opening remarks. And he said very neutrally, the objective of the project is to get better better reflection of risk management activities. And I think it will be important for us to message on that better does not equal perfect and complete, because there are many different things that people do in their risk management activities, and we aren't making value judgments about whether they're right or wrong. But what we have identified as the central piece that we're trying to capture is the are the risk management activities around net interest income. Now, we saw a big push in this feedback for immediate expansion of the model to include coverage of hedging of a deemed interest component of equity. And I can't remember if I'm dipping into later papers or if this is also covered in the summary, sorry. But it may be as a suggestion for the project management plan, it may be worth trying to do an initial assessment of how much complexity that would add so that we have a good idea going in early whether or not that's doable. I am not particularly sympathetic to it, but if the message is it's not worth doing it unless we can also cover that activity, then that feels like something that we have to assess earlier rather than later. I also think Sue's comment was a very constructive thinking about the messaging that we were getting directly, but also indirectly, because, you know, as I think about her comments and then Martin's follow-up about expressing some surprise about the comments about OCI volatility, I feel like I'm that there's an expression, and maybe it's in code, that's saying reconsider measuring hedging derivatives at amortized cost instead of fair value, and because that's the only way I can see to eliminate all volatility in the financial statements, and to me that's just not that's not a viable path to even evaluate. So I think rather than just moving immediately to that position, I think Sue's suggestion about understanding if there is any common ground about what volatility is appropriate to reflect in financial statements would be good. But going back to kind of the project plan and trying to think about this executive feedback is what does it tell us about, you know, critical path for problem solving in this project. I think it probably is figuring out how much we feel we can do and how much better we think we can get the model, and then starting to assess that versus the feedback that we have, we're starting to receive already about the costs of making that change, because weighing off where we think we can go and what the, you know, the degree of improvement in faithful reflection of at least a set of risk management activities versus the expected costs would seem to be critical to the success or failure of this project. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for this round of comments. The staff can continue with the next paper.
Yeah, thank you, Hans. So we will combine Agenda Paper 4B and 4C together. Agenda Paper 4B provides the information relating to participants' interest rate risk management strategy that we received during the outreach. It also covers elements that are typically defined in such strategy, which are discussed in paragraph 11 to 40. This paper does not include any particular feedback on the DR model itself, but the staff think it will be useful information to provide context for the feedback summarized in other papers, and in particular, the Agenda Paper 4C. And as such, we are bringing the two papers together for the board discussion. The Agenda Paper 4C summarized the feedback in relation to the target profile in the DRM model. The board tentatively decided that the target profile should be defined as a single outcome, and the change to the target profile expected to be quite rare. However, as summarized in paragraph 7 to 15 of the paper, universally, all the participants said their target profile is not defined on a single outcome basis, but instead on a risk limits or range basis. This is also consistent with some of the regulatory framework, such as the interest rate risk in banking book, IRRBB framework. Participants said that as long as the net open risk position remained within such risk limits, it would consider the dynamic interest rate risk management as being successful. And they argued defining the target profile as a single outcome would be artificial and fundamental departure from the entity's risk management strategy. Participants also provided additional feedback about the target profile, which is summarized in paragraph 16 to 28 of the paper. The key points discussed there include the clarification of the definition of the target profile, further guidance on which changes of the target profile would lead to imperfect alignment, and clarification on whether they can use a combination of risk metrics, including the use of economic value of equity in addition to the net interest income we already discussed. So I'll pause here to see whether board members have any additional comments in addition to what we have been raised and discussed so far. Thank you.
Can I comment, Hans?
Yes, please. Go ahead, Sue. Yeah.
So on these papers, in terms of things which I think are critical to address based on the feedback that we've got, I'd put probably quite near the top of the list this issue around risk limits and the fact that the way that we talked about a particular sort of single target, for want of a better description, is just not how the banks risk manage. I think that means that for us to have any a chance of both aligning with actual risk management and sort of coming up with a model that the banks would agree is a faithful representation of their risk management, we will need to somehow work out how to accommodate risk limits. Now, that's sort of good, but it's also difficult because obviously it was fundamental to how we thought about the performance reporting aspects. And it's also got a bit of a moral hazard sort of transparency issue around it, because the risk we're going to have is that the wider a bank sets its risk limits, the less information we might get about the quality of their performance, because if you have narrow risk limits, we might see that there's a difference between, you know, what you aim for and what you got, whereas you could mask that by broadening your risk limits. So we're going to need to deal with that in a couple of ways. I think we're going to have to adjust how we think about performance reporting and maybe be a little bit creative in terms of combining the performance reporting that we're thinking about in terms of what ends up in P&L as a mismatch, and where we get transparency elsewhere through disclosure or something else to sort of complement that, so that it's not just the P&L picture that's the whole story, but there's some other information about where you are within the limit or something like that, that gives you a better ability to compare between banks in particular, so that we don't get, you know, somebody looking like a superstar simply because they've got very broad limits. And so I think that's going to need quite a big rethink, but I think we are going to have to address that to get something that's both a fair reflection and sort of accepted by the banks.
Okay. Jen Chao.
Thank you, Hans. Just a couple of comments. First, about the risk, the target profile, I think almost all participants raised this issue, that is, they are focusing on a risk limit rather than single outcome. So I think if our objective of the project is to better reflect risk management activities and strategy, I think we should consider this concern when we improve our model. But as mentioned, that I think additional accounting restrictions or additional disclosure may need to be added if we change this kind of the notion of target profile. Secondly, I also appreciate about the new finding or new message in relation to the risk metrics, you know. Because previously, when we develop a model, we focus on to stabilizing net interest income. So we focus on net interest income. But now we got new message that actually there is another risk, at least another new risk metrics, that is economic value of equity is commonly used. So I think in next step, I think we should also consider this new risk metric, whether it will have some impact on our, dynamic risk management model, and what kind of impact it will, and whether any improvement on our model needed. Thirdly, I also appreciate about the basis, because previously it seemed that we developed that model based on the consolidation basis, but it really depends on whether the banks have centralized the risk management system in place. But based on the feedback we got, it seemed that some banks or some, participants said that actually they follow a decentralized approach to manage interest rate, risk. So I think maybe we should also consider both, how to address those issues if they are managing those interest risks on individual entity basis rather than a consolidation basis. I appreciate that paragraph 23 of agenda paper B already mentioned some key points. And finally, I think about some stakeholder also mentioned actually they also when they manage those interest risk interest rate risks, they also include those deemed interest rate risk exposures in equity. So from equity perspective, I think previously, I think we are going to address this issue in the next step, but I'm not sure whether we can, address the issue, together, not only focus on financial liability perspective, also look at another funding, sources that is maybe they get funding from equity, some maybe, common shares, some maybe some kind of equity like infrastructure that have liability or debt features relevant to the FICE project, because there are some different kind of financial instruments with equity, but they may be classified as equity, but those funding maybe have some impact on our DIM model as well. So thank you so much. I think all those new information really helpful for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Jianqiao. Tadeo?
Thank you, Hans. On paragraph 22 on paper 4B, I tend to agree with the participants that said that the scenario in each different country may be so different. And we know that, and it is definitely when we look at the variable rate, the size of the interest rate, and etc., it's very different. That you have a group, you may have a main principle, a guidance, but a centralized strategy would be difficult to be implemented. And then the group has usually a decentralized approach to interest rate risk management. And I'm wondering how we can reconcile this situation with the single outcome in the proposed DRM model. I personally think this is possible, but we need to work how to incorporate this in the proposal or make clearer this possibility is implicit in what we are proposing. On agenda paper 4C, we sometimes refer to transparency on the successful of the risk management strategy, but there is a subtle conflict with the bank's practice that we refer to in paragraph 11B. They said that they do not make retrospective tests or check. They simply move forward. They like a prospective view and showing how successful was their strategy. They will need to collect information. That's a bit different from what they have to do. But I think that's something that we should make clear. If we want them to show how successful they were, they would need to collect information that today, at least based on the feedback, they are not necessarily doing. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tadeo. Anne?
Thanks, Hans. I agree with others who've said that the target profile issue is one of the big things that we have to address. Because when we looked at this in 2018, we talked a lot about the conceptual and practical difficulties of trying to do a range instead of a specific measure, and that was all key to performance measurement. Also, at the time, we said it's a model that it is about a measurement of the performance. And we needed to think about measuring it and having that in P&L and not just having a disclosure solution. So I agree with others that are suggesting to staff that this is a fundamental thing that we need to address. It looks like there is some common ground in terms of a way for the staff to be able to be describing and defining target profile that does align more with the bank's understanding of the concept we're trying to use. But still we've got, it's difficult for us to accommodate, how much can we accommodate this range given that it undermines the performance measurement part of it. So I do agree we've got a fundamental issue to look at here as part of trying to move the project forward. Thank you.
Mary?
A couple of things. Like others, I certainly took away the clear message that this point versus range for risk limits is a critical issue as we're thinking about what's the feedback we should prioritize assessing. And I chose my word about assessing carefully because as I think about this, and my background is not as a specialist in FI, but it does, the issues raised do resonate in something that's analogous rather than directly applicable. And I think of IS 37 and provisions, let's say, for litigation. In that circumstance, very often for a number of years, an entity really will be thinking about its litigation exposure as a range. And yet we force them for recognition in measurement purposes to identify one point in the range as the reflection in the financial statements, but also very importantly, supplement that with disclosure requirements about the range. And if I marry that thinking with the remarks that, for example, Tadeo was making about this isn't, today I'm about to put words in your mouth, but it isn't just about flowing through the risk management into the financial statements. It's about flowing it, reflecting it, but bringing kind of the discipline of accounting, financial reporting in the sense of reporting actual versus objectives. And to do actual versus objectives, I think we've got to think about a couple of things. One is that you do have to go back and say what actually happened versus what did I expect. And I think to do that, you have to have some benchmark. And this kind of goes back to Sue's moral hazard point. And so one of the things, trying to be creative, which is always dangerous for an accountant, trying to be creative about how we look at this, especially given that we have looked at and concluded we couldn't do ranges versus points when we were developing the model, I wonder if we think about requiring identification of the point against which you measure achieved, not achieved, and imperfection, but also build in what we've learned from this consultation, which is that risk strategies change infrequently, while what your target is within the range can change frequently, and whether we should reflect, whether we think that's an important communication point, and if so, whether we reflect it by some kind of prospective incorporation of a change in the point within a range versus a change in the objective. So that's something I think is a priority for us to think about assessing in terms of assessing the viability of a model that we can bring. And the second thing, and I think it's second or third order to that, is in paper 4C, there's a discussion in paragraph 17B about the importance of looking at net of assets versus gross. And if the staff has any more color or comment you can add about whether you think that's a big deal or not, if it's more communication or if it's something that can be accommodated within our thinking, that would be good either today or in future. That was the other thing that came out of these two papers that I focused on. Thank you.
Rika, please.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for staff for good outreach and thorough analysis of the outreach outcome and good summary, excellent summary on the paper. And I agree with what other board member already mentioned, but I would like to touch on a couple of things. First is to make this model simplified. We only focus on interest risk management, but now maybe it's a good time for us to think about how this model can accommodate managing other risk metrics like EVE in addition to interest rate risk management strategy. And also, I think if this single scenario approach can't reflect the bank's actual risk management as we expected, I think it's worth exploring the risk limit or the range approach and the feasibility of it. But there might be some kind of the discipline should be implemented when considering the implementation of the risk limit or range. I'm just wondering if any specific discipline is necessary other than defining a risk limit and consistent application over time. I really want to know what they and how they affect the accounting to achieve the objective to reflect the risk management on the financial statement. And another thing also, Tadu touched on, but I and Mary touched, difference of the forward-looking approach and restrictive retrospective model is a kind of the natural outcome because of the what we are doing is addressing the issue and to resolve in accounting, but not modeling or establishing the management strategy. So I just want to understand how the exploration of these the benefit of exploration outweigh the cost of the implementation in practice in the future discussion. Thank you.
Okay, Bruce.
Thanks very much, Hans. I guess just a couple of observations from my side that are probably pretty in line with what everybody else has said. I mean, to start off with, the one thing in 4B that really kind of stuck out to me was that the majority of the respondents were really telling us that the way people are determining the risk management strategy was not really aligned with the proposal we were looking at. So it wasn't all necessarily about stabilizing NII. To me, we've got to try, you know, to me, the objective of what we wanted to achieve, or we've been saying one of our objectives, is to make sure in the way we're reflecting in the financials what people are doing. And I guess to me, we've got to try and align those things. The other thing is just pretty much along the same lines, everybody else, the same comment on the risk limit versus target profile. I mean, it sounds to me like the target profile just isn't a way people are doing this. So I guess if I had to look at what I would want to get out of the project going forward, I mean, the first thing is to understand from my point of view, if we move to that, what is, how do we operationalize that? So what is the impact it has on the model? How could we propose a model that operationalizes that? And are the banks happy that we operationalize that and that we get the right answer in the financial statements? I guess I'd also just express the same view that Anne did. And I appreciate the comments Sue made around the fact that this was very Eurocentric. And yeah, maybe I guess it is just the way the banking is there. But I just think that when we start doing that outreach further, especially if we're looking at potentially some substantial changes to the model, just to make sure that we kind of extend that out just a bit more so that we can make sure it's not impacting, well, we've got some unintended consequences in other areas that may not necessarily have had the chance to comment. Thanks.
Françoise?
Yes, thank you. I mean, these issues really bring me into brainstorming mode, so I don't have any real direction or wonderful idea to suggest, but just a few thoughts. I think it is this element of risk limit that put me to reconsider or rephrase, not to reconsider, but rephrase or rethink what our objective in this model should be. Because to me, I mean, as I said earlier, isolating the effects of hedge activities is one important element towards greater transparency and better understanding of what happens through hedge strategy. But if I were focused on reflecting economic performance, because I wouldn't want that economic performance be reported differently just because hedging strategies would have differences. So when you say, well, we have a big hurdle here of not having what is reported depending on the width of risk limits, I totally agree with her. And, you know, whether it's within limits or not within limits is more something that I would see in disclosures rather than being at the core, within the core mechanics of reflecting economic performance. So I think, I mean, if I think of all the improvement, evolution that has been made around hedge accounting since the macro hedge requirements were designed back then, I think that there is eventually one, and again, I'm in brainstorming, so eventually what I say is stupid. But one thing that I would like to see eventually in thinking destabilized a bit is this idea that you measure alignment or non-alignment based on what was anticipated rather than being what really exists at the reporting date. So I think I would wish to say we and again it's not a definite answer. Maybe it would lead to things that we wouldn't want in the end, but if we could allow some brainstorming around this idea that let's move away from measuring versus some predefinite scheme and look more at the reality at which, you know, the assets and liabilities on the one hand and the hedging instruments on the other have interacted together, having in mind that, of course, what we take into account has hedging instruments and all these mechanics. He is totally consistent with the risk management strategy that the banks have implemented.
Tom, please.
Sorry. I agree with what everyone said. I think, in particular,
for this to succeed, we do need to think about the risk limits. And it seemed to me that I was listening to Mary's comment about the need to assess performance against an objective. And so it, in some sense, comes down to can the objective be a range? And I think so. And I think it's worth careful consideration, and it should be possible to do this in an informative way. I started thinking about my NHS National Health Service tests. When the doctors go in, they'll prescribe things for conditions, and almost everything has an established range before the test, and then the thing comes out and you get a signal with your test, and they have a color if it's in the range, and they have a different color if it's outside the range, and they have a long history, and the doctors get to look at this. But it seems to me one of the reasons this works well, that being in the range is the objective. The doctors are happy if you're there. They're happy if you're smack in the middle, but they're happy if you're in the range, is that they have a very good way of establishing what is a reasonable and safe range, ex ante, before the fact. And so it seems to me one of the key things with respect to the moral hazard concern is that it can't be purely arbitrary, obviously, but how much could we do and how much could we work to with people in economics and finance to establish reasonable ways of assessing what this range is ex ante? And that would in some sense be part of what an entity would need to do. Now, I'm not sure if this is possible, but it seems to me that we have a lot of economic expertise out there. And if you could establish that the range is reasonable ex ante, then I think it can be a reasonable objective, to use the term that Mary brought in. So anyway, I do think if we're to achieve success in the long run, we have to do something there. And I do think this might be a way to get there, but it has to be done carefully.
Martin?
Yeah, a question, because if we in the future would think about how to incorporate ranges or risk limits in the model, and for me it would be, it's more a question, because my understanding is when risk management speak about risk limits, it is also an element of positioning about the expectation how interest rates are moving and will be developed in the future. So my understanding is if they acting in risk limits, that could also be happening that they're using derivatives to increase interest rates risk, even if they are in their limits, because that is what they're monitoring. And that would lead that they're using derivatives which are not reducing interest rate risk, which then are in the model. And that would, for me, I think, a no-go. And I think if we're discussing that in the future, I think we have to do a little bit more research. But at least my understanding is when risk management speak about risk limits, they're using derivatives for both sides. Maybe increase an interest rate position or decreasing that, and can use derivatives based on what the expectation of the future is. And then the question is, are we fine if banks using derivatives which are not reducing interest rate risk and which are being included in the model? And that is, for me, I think, a big question which we have to answer before we think about risk limits and incorporating into the model. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Martin. All right, I think no more questions. So the staff can move on to 4D.
So I think maybe at this point, you know, all the comments we've been getting has been very helpful. And you're right that there are some critical points we need to address first before looking at some of the other comments. And so what is in paper 4D, I think will sort of go with, in trying to solve the risk limits question, we'll also be looking at what is in 4D. But I think in the interest of time, it's maybe better if we skip over that paper for today and we'll bring it back at a later point, but maybe just briefly touch on paper 4E, which okay. is the other critical point. So maybe Emilio, for your first and last board meeting, you can take us through paper 4E.
Yes. Now, very briefly, because agenda paper 4E has feedback on the fair OCI mechanism of the model. The banks, participating banks, raised two concerns. One you have already mentioned, raised by not by all, but only by some participants only, was referring to IFRS volatility, equity volatility. So you have already commented on that. The other main concern that was raised by all the banks participating to that reach was about the possible impacts on common equity tier one, that is on regulatory capital, because if a prudential filter, which is in place today for cash wage reserve, would not be set by regulators, they would see a huge concern in the volatility of the regulatory capital. So this was, the main concern the banks raised. Of course, this is a regulatory issue, it's not an accounting issue, but it's a matter for potential regulators, but they asked the board to keep in touch with regulators to deal with this topic. I've been very brief just to save time, but I'm open to your question. No, no.
Thanks, Hans. So this is obviously a bit troubling, this feedback, given that the whole model's built on cash flow mechanics, and particularly troubling to me given that the fair value hedge accounting mechanics weren't popular when we went out with the previous discussion papers. That doesn't leave us with a lot of wiggle room. I think an important thing here, there's two important aspects of this, just looking at the consequences of the mechanics. One is the effect for the banks from a prudential regulatory purpose, which is obviously fundamentally important to the banking industry. And so I know that we plan to accelerate our discussions with the prudential regulators to see if we can get some interaction with them and some level of comfort that in the same way that there are filters for cash flow hedge accounting mechanics today for prudential purposes, whether something like that would be possible for these mechanics as well, which would address that prudential regulatory side. I'm hopeful there, although I don't have any confirmation to prove that, but I'm hopeful. The thing that worries me a bit more, though, is the feedback from those who were concerned about the effect on the IFRS equity. And this has come up in the past. I can't even remember when it was, maybe when we were working on classification and measurement of IFRS 9 at some point in time, a concern that if we had volatility in IFRS equity caused by things being remeasured through OCI, that there could be a run on the bank because people would be concerned that the bank wasn't strong enough because of its IFRS equity. Now, in the feedback, based on my reading of it, it seems that it was, you know, only a handful of the participants who really focused on this IFRS equity piece of things. But we, of course, have a very small sample that we're working with, and it might just be that they haven't focused on that as much as they would ultimately. What I'd love to do would be to really get a better understanding of how big an issue that is going to be from an IFRS equity point of view, because for me, if that's a, you know, if that's going to be a potential showstopper, it doesn't mean we should give up, but it does mean we should go in with our eyes wide open. And so I'd be keen to try and find a way to get some more rounded feedback on that IFRS equity side of things as an extra data point for our thinking.
Tadeo.
Thank you, Hans. Actually, it's very much in line with what so said, and definitely I'm not proposing any solution here. And I just understood that one thing that sounds to be easier, with, although it's not under our control, is to talk to the regulators, definitely. I think that this is something that if the problem would be only this one. But I understood that it might go beyond the regulatory compliance, and I'm just wondering, and I think that this was also in the Sue's word, whether we can work some with some alternatives to the use of the OCI. I mean, that for some kind of transactions, allowing some kind of fair value hedge, not exactly the cash flow hedge model, but it's something that I think that definitely we have to work out maybe with the participants to see whether they have some alternative to propose. Thank you.
Well, I mean, the comments are a bit along the same line. I think we should run some form of impact assessment in order to identify the potential effects of the mechanics that we have prioritized at this stage. The other two comments that I would like to make on this issue is that we are really talking about mechanics in one way or the other. So is there something which is so fundamental that we need to accommodate one rather than the other? And the last comment I wanted to make is in relation to the message that we heard back in 2014 on the last discussion paper. I think the thing that was, from my memory, which was really widely rejected at the time, the population of assets that were within the hedging strategy activity was to be revalued. It was far more than just fair value hedge mechanics.
I think Hans, you are mute, but maybe I start, man. I want also to say clearly, my understand that banks want to have a kind of what will happen with this OCI position for regulatory capital, and we have to maybe start discussion with regulators on that. But secondly, there was some banks have made recommendation, maybe we should allow kind of fair value hedge model in this. But man, if you think about that, man, when we have developed the portfolio revaluation approach, also what Sue said, man, that was a fair value model that was really valuing the net open position, including derivatives and including the underlying financial instruments. And that was a fair value model. And the feedback we got on this, I think, was also not very positive from the banks. So I don't understand how many or how banks could now say, maybe we should think about a fair value hedge, because that was what we had done under the portfolio revaluation approach. And one last comment, because man, as I said earlier, I think I don't know why banks are now so concerned about this OCI volatility. Man, in all the discussions which we had on classification measurement, also some in Europe now think about how to account for equity securities and allowing an OCI model. Are they not concerned in this because OCI volatility? Why is it that they are not concerned here and they are concerned here? I don't understand that, because they have rejected a fair value model. Then we go to cash flow model, and I don't have any idea what is then left. That's what Mary said earlier. Maybe they want amortize cost, but that is not, I think, what we should presume. Thanks.
But that is, Martin, but that is, of course, what the European carve-out allows them to do. And that is a perfectly simple solution for them, but, of course, very far from faithful representation. That is the problem here. Rihanna, would you perhaps like to make some final comments, or is that not necessary?
Maybe just to say that, you know, like I said before, all of these comments have been helpful, and it will help us develop our project plan on how we think we need to address all of these critical issues. And so maybe at the May meeting, we'll come back to you with our proposed project plan, and we'll get your views on that plan at the next meeting. But for now, thank you again for all of your views and insights into these papers.